Mini-episode 958 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at Sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late-night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini-episode number 958. It's that time of year again. We've got our annual NASCAR preview in the form of our FantasyDraftHelp.com NASCAR mock draft. Rick Morris, your FDH managing partner, along with my good friend, your FDH motorsports editor, Mike Petak, here for the festivities as always. This time we actually drafted off-air. We are doing this in a little bit more condensed format than years past because of time considerations for both Mike and myself. But a pleasure to have you here, as always, my friend, to break down the results of what we did.
Looking forward to it. Yeah, Ricky, it's always good to talk to you. It's always good to talk about the little NASCAR with it snowing outside. It means spring's around the corner, and so is Daytona.
That's right. That's right. We're right on the verge of that. Always good to get to record with you, going way, way back, even before the days of the lounge, to the old late lamented Sports Talk Network. You and I have gone a long ways back in breaking down a number of subjects, but motorsports probably chief among them as far as what we've done together on air, and particularly in the FDH Lounge form. And you were mentioning to me off air, I wanted to get to a few things at the outset just to kind of set the big picture for this year. I had one thing in mind, which we'll get to in a second, but you mentioned something that's even bigger, I think, in terms of last year, the breakthrough of the championship going to one of the non, shall we say, franchise teams out there.
Yeah, for the last 2 years, you know, previous, Mark Truex has just been really tremendous. But, you know, he's never been with one of those big teams. And, you know, Furniture Row, you know, I think large part to Martin Truex's success went from a single-car operation to a two-car operation last year. And I know they're, quote-unquote, you know, in bed with Joe Gibbs Racing. But, to not have a Gibbs or Stuart Haas or a Penske or, you know, big names win a championship, I think that's great.
There's a lot for the sport. Yes, it absolutely does a lot to kind of flatten it out a little bit and make it seem like there's more possibilities at the top there, which, again, as we've seen in a number of different sports, not least of which the NBA, that is something that can sort of be crushing to the fans of everybody else if it seems to be controlled too much at the top by a couple of entities. The other thing that I wanted to get to at the outset, a little bit of a transitional year over the last 12 months for NASCAR, in that you're talking about the passing from the scene, I don't mean death, but as far as people walking away. First, just before last year, Carl Edwards, subsequently after the season, of course, Dale Earnhardt Jr., Danica Patrick, Matt Kenseth. Kenseth actually being the sole series champion of the four of them. And it's kind of an interesting thing because you look back earlier in their careers, to use the old wrestling analogy, particularly earlier in his career, Earnhardt would have qualified for this. Carl Edwards at most parts of his career. Those are guys you sort of looked at sort of like The Rock or Goldberg, guys that could be like big, huge main event players. Kenseth was more like Mick Foley, just, you know, a big-time guy. He got one title in there, but it's interesting. He ends up being the only one out of those three to retire with a championship. And subsequently, you're looking at a situation here where I think it's a lot like Michael Jordan. We just did the recent breakdown on the show here of the top NBA players of all time. One of the reasons I put Michael Jordan number one was the number of other top stars that he froze out from winning titles. And I think when you look at these three guys here, it's a classic example of the Jimmy Johnson effect, being of the same generation as him. You've got Michael Jordan. He kept players from winning championships then. Because of Jimmy Johnson, you've got guys like Matt Kenseth that only won one title, Earnhardt and Edwards that didn't win any titles, and that's part of the legacy as we look back on their careers.
Yeah, absolutely. One name
as well.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's a lot of big names, you know, retiring. I think it opens it up. And I'm a little more excited this year than most. I mean, like you said, yeah, those big names are gone. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm a Dale Jr. fan from the word go. And, you know, it's going to be different, you know, not having him, you know. He had not been successful. He is, you know, he didn't, not only did he not live up to expectations, he so far underperformed from what everybody thought and hoped he would do. But still, because it was Dale Earnhardt Jr., you know, I was tuning in every Sunday when I can. So I think it's going to be really interesting to see, especially how, you know, some of these teams, like especially Hendrick, how they're going to rebuild using these younger, you know, stars.
Exactly.
Yeah, they have the old standby Jim Johnson, but it's not the Hendrick team that you're used to, where it's like, you know, you have three or four, you know, superstars, you know, using our draft that, you know, they could be for the first six people, you know, chosen in the draft, and nobody would bat an eye at it.
Yeah, that's the kind of power that they've had over a period of time. And speaking of the draft here, we had a first-time participant, I believe, in the draft this year, FDH senior editor Jason Jones. He drew the number one pick, and then there was the other four of us that participated last year. By the way, congratulations to you as the champion from last year. FDH Lounge dignitary Anthony Patrone was in second place, notwithstanding having the series champion last year, but you, Mike Pitak, our motorsports editor, reigned supreme in 2017.
Well, I'd like, you know, I think, you know, like everything else, it's teamwork. You know, you put the draft guy together. You know, we talk about it, we tweak it a little bit. I mean, but it's so little tweaking that, you know, we both seem to be on the same page. And, you know, without, you know, your help putting the guy together, you know, I wouldn't even been, you know, I have the drivers who I like and whatnot. But, you know, you look at your guide and it's just tremendous.
I appreciate that. Thank you. And yes, your input on the draft, you're the one guy who has a lot of input on it, and it is always very much appreciated and very valuable, as evidenced by your victory. But yes, Jason Jones in at the first spot this year, drawing that spot. He is our FDH senior editor, of course. FDH Lounge dignitary Matt Patrone, second spot. I was third. Anthony Patrone, FDH Lounge dignitary, fourth. You, Mike Pitak, fifth. This leads to a first round where it goes as follows. Kyle Busch goes with the first pick to Jason. He was the first pick on our board. Interestingly enough, on Anthony's draft board, fourth. Anthony is always somebody who pushes back at how highly we have Kyle Busch from year to year. He always finds that to be a little controversial. But Jason agrees and takes him with the top pick. There were some picks later on where he deviated from the board a bit. Second pick, Matt Patrone, goes with Kevin Harvick, a very strong pick there. You can't really disagree with that. I took Martin Truex third. Anthony with the fourth pick.
Boy, you know, last time I said you probably stole that pick from
Anthony. Yeah, and that's that's an interesting thing right there. That the good old Matt Patrone, we had a little bit of contentious texting back and forth, and for somebody who has appeared in a number of our Serpentine drafts over a period of time, including our famous band draft, which I can't believe it's been 10 years, but it'll be 10 years in December.
10 years since the band draft?
10 years, December of 08, I believe. And he was in studio for that one. So this is somebody who knows how Serpentine drafts work, and he got pissy with me that Anthony didn't get Martin Truex with the fourth pick. By the way, there's a legal term that gets thrown around a lot. I hear this in legal circles. Reasonable expectation. You have no reasonable expectation of getting the defending champion with the fourth overall pick. I'm sorry. That's pretty rare, I would say, in any NASCAR draft, whatever year we're talking about.
In any draft.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, it's almost, you know, if Jimmy Johnson had won the championship,
yeah,
he would have gone number one at the bat of an eye, and nobody would have thought, you know, anything about it.
Exactly. And it's only because Kyle Busch and Kevin Harvick are so strong from year to year that he even dropped to me at number three. I mean, we had him second on the board, but I think Busch, Truex, Harvick, in whatever order, you would expect to go one, two, three in a lot of drafts there. He goes three to me, and Matt, God bless him, just jumps to, you cheated my brother, rather than asking me the question or whatever. Just accusation from Jump Street, but whatever, we forgive you, Matt.
Absolutely. It's all in good bought. Because I knew that this happened is why I bought
that. Yeah, because I bitched to you about it. But yeah, that was so Anthony with the fourth pick goes to Jimmy Johnson. You with the fifth pick, Brad Keselowski. So again, thoughts on that first round? Those are the five guys I think you would generally expect to go in the first round of one of these drafts. But your thoughts on any of these guys?
Yeah, I mean, it's like you said, you're getting defending champ at number three, but you can't take away from Kyle Busch and his top tens. He's finishing stages high. He's the typical, I don't want to say high risk, high reward, but that's the kind of driver that he is. And, that's where you get your points.
Right. You got him there. And then, again, Harvick, Truex, Johnson, Keselowski, the upper crust of the NASCAR drivers these days, I think most would tell you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, Truex, he doesn't have that big team, name behind him. He's in Furniture Row out of Denver, Colorado, but he's the defending champ. And it's really hard for me to say, wow, it wasn't a Gibbs, it wasn't a Haas, it wasn't a Penske, it wasn't a Hendrick. And it just changes things up. He has a lot of wins, he's a great driver, and they're like, okay, what could he do on a major team? I think this team just suits him just fine.
I think it does as well.
And like I said, sometimes, you mentioned Martin Truex, and it's like, yeah, he's a defending champ, but he's not, like you said, he's not one of these power teams. And I think that's what's good for NASCAR. And last year, again, Truex was up there as well because he's been very steady and very consistent. And sometimes you just look at it and, he's not one of the power teams. But he does have the backing of Joe Gibbs behind him.
Right.
So that partnership does them well.
It absolutely like I said, does.
It's just, 'cause I always look at the teams. And that's kind of how if it's close, if they're a power team versus a single car team or two car team, I'll always go with the power team. And this is the one case where it's like, it's just a good driver. This may be one of the exceptions to the question, is it the driver or is it the car?
Right, right. That's a very good point there. And, he has proven what a driver can, I don't want to rip the team by saying overcome, but in terms of resources, I think you do have to use the word overcome, don't you? I mean, I don't want that as a slam
Absolutely.
Towards the team, but that the resources are what they are.
Yeah, they're a two-car team, and they just became the two. They were a one-car team for years.
Yes, and it's all, that expansion is all because of him, and that's an important part of his legacy, I think, as we look back on his career. We're a long ways from looking back on it and reviewing the totality
right.
of it, but, I mean, that will be in his, I don't want to use a downer word and say professional obituary, but whenever the time comes, 10, 20, 25 years, whatever, maybe it won't
right.
be that long, to be honest with you, because the one thing I will say about the wave of retirements, I think back on the Labontes and, Dale Sr., who would have kept going past 2001, I think, in all likelihood, however far. This is something where we're seeing that guys seem to be done a little bit earlier in terms of having, I guess it would be the backing to be on a top team. It sort of seems like the one of the reason we're seeing some of these retirements is the leash is a little shorter, it seems like.
Yeah. Well, with Gordon and going right into the booth.
True. Yeah,
and I'm sure they're paying them handsomely.
Yes, that's a good point as well, and we can't discount the health issues with Dale Earnhardt
right.
Jr. with having the concussion, so that had something to do with it as well, in terms of him
right.
cutting it short. In the second round, you followed up the Keselowski pick with Kyle Larson. Subsequently, from there, Anthony takes Chase Elliott. I took Denny Hamlin. Matt went Kurt Busch, which was a little bit off the board in terms of value, albeit I felt like he got a pretty good value, almost a better pick, I would say, in the third round. We'll get to that. And then Jason ends the round with Jamie McMurray, where he kind of goes off the board a little bit, not too much, but a very interesting second round, I thought, with some of the picks there. In terms of the way that we color code our draft board, with we have it set for 6 picks per round, so it's color-coded gold, silver, bronze accordingly. 6 picks, 6 picks, 6 picks. You, of course, end up with the only 2 gold picks out of the bunch. The rest of us were going a gold and a silver. Jason going a gold and a bronze with his pick there. But with you starting with Larson all the way down through Elliott, Hamlin, the veteran in the middle, and then Kurt Busch as well, and McMurray. So it's a thing where we started young and the round got a little bit older and more experienced as we went.
Right, right. And, I mean, right now, if, you know, based on, again, the teams and whatnot, I think right about here is where you can see, okay, in the second round, somebody said if they won a championship, would you be surprised? Yeah, a little bit, but not much. I think right around here in this area is where you're going to see a little bit of a drop-off as far as, you know, championship contenders.
I think that's probably true. I think that's fair to say. And
you may get another one, you know, in round 3. You know, there'll be a few people, one or two people, that, you know, they could have won this round. You know, for example, Ricky Stenhouse, he's had a nice year, and... I'm trying to look at my board here and multitask.
Well, Joey Logano, who I had in the first round last year, he killed my team last year with the kind of year that he had. But that's a guy that, you know, he was coming up more or less, I think, about the same time as Truex. And they sort of had the young guns kind of reputation or a little earlier in the decade. Keselowski as well, sort of a contemporary of theirs. So you look at it and you got, you know, somebody like Logano who... You know, they talk about it in other sports. I see it a lot in baseball where they talk about the post-hype prospects. You know, he the third round seems like a perfect example of that, does he not?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think him and Keselowski are really good teammates for each other. They're sort of yin and yang.
Yes. Yes, they are. And it would have been interesting if they'd have been paired up in this game, but it didn't prove to be that way. In the third round, Jason goes outside of the gold, silver, bronze altogether with Clint Bowyer to start the round. The second pick of the round was Matt taking Joey Logano. That's the foreshadowing that I got to before. We actually have Logano higher on the board by a couple spots than Kurt Busch, so I thought he reached a little in the second round, but I thought he got really good value in the third round, so it all evens out. I mean, if I'd have been him, I'd have taken Logano in the second, Busch in the third, but, it, you know, he got them both,
right,
so it doesn't matter. I got Ryan Blaney with the third pick as I go young, second generation there, like a couple of these other guys. Another young guy with the fourth pick, no longer Mr. Danica. Ricky Stenhouse Jr. goes to Anthony. And with the fifth pick, you got Daniel Suarez, another one of these young guys who, again, last year didn't really get a chance to prepare, got thrown into the fire as the Carl Edwards replacement, and a year later has had time to kind of settle into his surroundings.
Yeah, I think, you know, last year actually really, you know, I didn't expect much out of him last year. I think it was a huge learning experience for him, and I see him having the Chase Elliott had last year.
I would agree with that. And for you to get him at the end of the third round, props to you. Major, major value there.
Yes, big. Like I said, if he can have the type of year that Chase Elliott had, I mean, Chase hasn't had that big breakout race yet, but he was always in the top, you know, 5, top 10, and I think we can, expect the same out of Daniel Suarez.
I think that's very reasonable to expect. We get to the fourth round here, and we continue to have a number of bronze-colored picks here, meaning third-round value on the board, albeit for a 6-team draft instead of a 5-team draft, but it shows you that the value is still stacking up fairly nicely here. You start the round off, I think, pretty nicely in terms of value as you get the guy who is our first third-round value on our board, Erik Jones. You get him at the top of the fourth. Austin Dillon goes to Anthony with the second pick. Alex Bowman goes to me with the third pick. So, again, we start the round, you know, young right there. We go to Matt, who takes Ryan Newman with the next pick, and then Jason with Will Byron at the end. So, with the exception of Matt's pick of a very established guy in Ryan Newman, and where, at the very least, Matt is getting, I think, a floor that he can live with, which you kind of understand that in the fourth round. The rest of us are all going team upside. 4 of the 5 picks there, real young guys in the fourth round.
Yeah, absolutely. This isn't a keeper league, We can't keep these guys as keepers.
If only we could, man. I like to freeze that.
Yeah, I you know, looking into the future, these are the guys, and obviously the safe pick is Newman, but sometimes safe isn't always better, and you got to look at the big picture, and I like the fact that for the most part we went young.
We did.
So we did. And you know, nothing against Newman, you know, like Ryan Newman, but it's almost like you get to that point, and I'm very happy where I got. You know, I guess I will be quite the Joe Gibbs Racing fan this year.
You're gonna have to be, I think, and it's a thing where when you get to the second half of this draft, I mean, it seems like it's a binary choice for me, pick by pick as you're going here. Because if it's young guys, you're going for ceiling. If it's older guys, you're going for floor. And I think the ideal mix probably in the last couple of rounds is to get that kind of combination of both in there. If you're going all floor, then you're probably not giving yourself a very good chance to win this thing. If you're going all ceiling, that's the very epitome of boom or bust right there. So would you kind of agree that that's what rounds 4, 5, and 6, you know, shape up like in one of these things?
Yeah. Sometimes you like to go, you mix it up. You get the young and the old and, the you know, the more experienced. And I look at the teams that they're racing on. And to me, that's, you know, it's important because if you have somebody that's, you know, let's say a number 4 driver on a one of the power teams,
mm-hmm.
against a 1 or a 2 car team, you know, there's a reason why this driver is not on a power team. Like, look at Casey Kane. Mm-hmm. You know, he went from a power team in Hendrick to, you know, a lesser team. So I would much rather, in this case, take the younger driver that's on the power Hendrick team with the more experienced, you know, Casey Kane.
Exactly. It's a good combination to have. We get into the 5th round here. Jason starts out the round as we start with a couple of these guys here going a little bit more established. Eric Almirola, he takes him for the first pick. Jason does. Matt goes A.J. Allmendinger, another relatively high floor pick where you kind of know what you're going to get out of him. I went younger with Ty Dillon for the 3rd pick. Anthony with the 4th pick. Kind of a mixture here. Trevor Bayhn, who as far back as, I can't believe it was 2011, actually won the Daytona 500. Success has been fleeting at best since then, and maybe that's kind of kind. So he's been around for a while, but he's still maybe young enough to have some upside. I don't quite know where he lands on that. And then Darrell Wallace with the 5th pick there, a definite young, high upside pick going for the Bloodlines, which is always very interesting in NASCAR and which has proven to be successful a lot of times. That's the thing about a lot of these second-generation guys in NASCAR. That's another comparison to WWE, of where you get a lot of these multi-generational guys, and they seem to be sort of set up for success there. In a round that went a little bit more established than the 4th round, you ended the round going for a lot of upside with the 5th pick.
Yeah, I really like your pick.
Thank you.
I really like Dillon, and I was kind of hoping he would slide to me, but you know, again, very happy with still with a young upside guy.
Absolutely, and you had mentioned Casey Kane before. Some nice foreshadowing in the 6th and final round. You start the round off by mixing in a little bit of that veteran floor, if you will. Casey Kane with the 1st pick of the round. Anthony follows up in that same vein with Paul Menard with the 2nd pick. Chris Buescher, I took him with the 3rd pick, so really doubling down on youthful upside with my team. We'll see how that goes. David Reagan with the pick for Matt, one of the few really kind of younger guys that he has on his team relative to the rest of the team. And I say relative and looking at some of the other guys that he's got. Michael McDowell going to Jason with the final pick, another fairly young guy as well. Something that Anthony had pointed out to me, an interesting point, and I think very much correct, is you go much deeper than this in any NASCAR drafts out there, and you're looking at guys who are really on the bubble for having full-time rides week to week. We're only going about 30 deep these days as far as guys that you can count on. But how would you assess the way that this final round went with some of the picks there?
You're in this round, you know, you're kind of hoping for the occasional, you know, top 10 or maybe somebody that specializes in a road track, you know, like an Allmendinger. I believe Allmendinger went the round before.
Yep.
You're just kind of looking to get points wherever you can, you know, this late.
I think you are. And in looking at the teams here, Jason with Kyle Busch, Jamie McMurray, Clint Bowyer, Will Byron, Eric Almirola, and Michael McDowell, an interesting blend of youthful upside as well as having a decent floor here for this team. I felt like, again, maybe not the greatest value with the Bowyer pick, but he comes back with Will Byron at the end of the fourth round where he kind of sort of makes up for it, a little bit like what Matt did with his second and third round picks there of recovering on the value a little later. Kyle Busch gives you a chance to do very well in this thing, as we've seen previously, but how would you assess Jason's team?
He made a couple of reaches.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, you know, you're starting off with Kyle Busch, and you can't go wrong there.
He
can get so hot, he can carry a team.
He can. That's the thing you see in fantasy sports sometimes. Fantasy NASCAR is no different. And again, yeah, sometimes being a first-time guy in one of these things with a couple of guys who've played fantasy NASCAR for years, sometimes there's a learning curve. We'll see how Jason navigates that this year. Matt's team clearly, I think, has the highest floor, but because he went so much on the high floor, I'm not sure what his chances of winning this are. I guarantee you, out of everybody, Matt's the one team I guarantee won't finish in last place. But it looks maybe a little more like a middle-of-the-pack team. I won't guarantee nobody else finishes last. I'll guarantee Matt doesn't finish last. My guess is middle-of-the-pack. Kevin Harvick, good upside there. Kurt Busch, Joey Logano, Ryan Newman, A.J. Allmendinger, David Reagan. This is a team where, again, Matt set this up. It's a veteran team. It's going to grind out points from week to week. It's a very coherent approach on his part. Matt had a philosophy, and he went out and he executed his philosophy, and we'll see how it plays.
Exactly. I think with all of his drivers, you know what to expect.
Yep, and there's a...
And there'll be very little deviation as far as wins, losses, middle of the packs.
Very much so. And again, you know, look, there's a scenario where he wins this thing. And I think the scenario, would you agree Joey Logano's his key guy? Like, if he bounces back to where we thought he was at the start of 2017, I think Matt pretty much needs that if he's going to win this thing.
I agree. I think, you know, if Logano can race like he did a couple years ago, and, you know, Harvick is just consistent, you know, the closer.
Right.
Yeah, that could be the key.
I think so. If Logano's top five, Harvick's got a great chance of being top five. The other guys are going to be pretty solid in there. He's going to need a couple of these guys to qualify for the chase. And if that happens, that's his scenario. But, yeah, highest floor anyways. My team, I don't know if I can say the same. I really kind of gambled young in a lot of ways, albeit a veteran guy in the second round, Denny Hamlin, that I hope still has some upside. I get Truex, the defending champion, number one. As I said, Hamlin, two. Ryan Blaney, three. Bowman, Ty Dillon, Chris Buescher, ending this thing up. A pretty young team, aside from Hamlin and to whatever extent Truex, who's now an established champion. So again, swinging for the fences with my team.
Nothing wrong with that. I think, as you can see, I kind of did the same thing.
You kind of did.
So I like your strategy, and it just happens to be how things fell on the draft board.
I think so, and I think in terms of if you're looking at the best balance, and I want to say that best balance doesn't guarantee you anything. It doesn't necessarily give you the best chance at winning. But if you're looking at the best balance of floor and ceiling, that would probably be Anthony's team. Jimmy Johnson, Chase Elliott, Ricky Stenhouse Jr., Austin Dillon, Trevor Bain, Paul Menard. It's got a lot of the floor characteristics of Matt's team, but it's got some higher ceiling characteristics as well, I believe.
Absolutely. Absolutely. When you can start your team with a Jimmy Johnson and then go to a Chase Elliott, you know, where do I sign up for that?
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and that's the thing. In a serpentine draft, you should, and again, you know, while Anthony famously missed out on Martin Truex with the fourth pick there, Jimmy Johnson, the best driver of this era, is one hell of a consolation prize. And then you should benefit in a lot of ways by getting that second pick pretty early. He did. The rest of us that were picking a little bit higher had to wait a little longer for our second round pick. He benefited by being able to get Chase Elliott where he did. You benefited by being able to follow up Brad Keselowski with Kyle Larson. Daniel Suarez subsequently, Eric Jones, Darryl Wallace, Casey Kane. A little bit of the mix of the blend of what Anthony did. Anthony, like I said, probably the best balanced team of the bunch between floor and ceiling. You're probably the next closest to him in terms of that, I would say.
Yeah. I've kind of, over the years, changed my strategy, and I've always been more of a, experience with just a touch of young. In the last couple of years, it's like, you know what, in order to win, sometimes you've got to hit on those middle to late rounds. You know, a guy that can get you a win, now win a couple of periods for you.
Absolutely.
A couple of the stages. And you know what? Sometimes you got to swing for the fences. And like I said, with the next team, you pretty much know how each driver is going to be. And they're not going to vary from this circle that they're in.
Right. And that's what's interesting as you look at the teams, because the most coherent single philosophy clearly belongs to Matt. So that's where it's kind of interesting to chart out, like, what is his blueprint to victory here? And again, I think for Matt, it becomes Joey Logano has to get back to where he was. And I think, to a certain extent, parity and chaos theory really benefits Matt's team more than anybody else's. If there's a lot of balance here, if a lot of us have a lot of drivers that are in the chase this year, I think that benefits him as well here. That for those of us, again, for me, probably with the most aggressive team out there, I probably benefit from more of a clear path. I need, you know, my guys hitting their potential. And it's not, if they do that, it's not going to depend on what anybody else does, to be honest with you. But for Matt's team, I think being able to sort of eke out his way to first place with, like you said, the guys where you pretty much know what you're going to get, and in Matt's case, you want to get a little bit more than what you are looking for with some of these picks. But again, he can't afford any of the rest of us getting too hot with any of our aggressive upside picks.
Exactly.
So it's interesting to see how that goes and how the strategies play out and the different approaches that we all took. And I thank everybody for their participation as always. And notwithstanding what I said previously, my frustration about getting those texts from Matt. We love you, Matt. It is what it is.
Exactly.
We go way back. I mean, Matt and I have aggravated one another at various points over the years, and will do so well into the future, as good friends are wont to do. So we will
Absolutely.
See how this plays out. And again, as always, can't thank you enough. You are the brains behind our motorsports operation, my friend. And again, something that will be a big part of this draft guide, as well as our draft board, having our mock draft in here, having your kind of commentary as well being a part of this. And again, the different draft boards for the different sports, F1 and IndyCar and the four NHRA circuits. And as I had alluded to you, for the first time ever, the combined Ultimate Racing game, all seven circuits in one, seeing if people can pick top five finishers in each of them. We'll see if anybody is truly demented enough to play that game, Mike.
I think the demented part is the person who put it together.
I am not even going to remotely argue.
Playing the game is the easy part. Putting the game together, that's a little.
Well, yes. And while I've got you here, I'll give you my quick top 10. Here's the top 10 on the board. Number one, Lewis Hamilton from Formula One. Number two, Eddie Kralik from Pro Stock Motorcycle. Number three, Kyle Busch from NASCAR. Number four, Joseph Newgarden, IndyCar. Number five, Martin Truex Jr., NASCAR. Number six, Greg Anderson, Pro Stock. Number seven, Ron Capps, Funny Car. Number eight, Scott Dixon, IndyCar. Number nine, Sebastian Vettel, Formula One. Number 10, Andrew Hines, Pro Stock Motorcycle. Your thoughts, Mike Ptak?
I really can't put it into words. That is just truly amazing. That it's great that you take the time to put these all together separately. and then just to decide, you know, I'm just twisted enough to combine them and come up with the ultimate motorsports draft.
It happened. I did it. It happened. It's in the guide along with all the rest of our stuff here, and the guide that will be up more or less about the time when people are able to access this show. The guide, of course, being available, as always, at FantasyDraftHelp.com and the FDHLounge.com. As always, my friend, I thank you. I wish you well. I look forward to speaking with you again in the near future.
Absolutely, my friend.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to FDH Lounge mini episode number 958 and our edition of the FantasyDraftHelp.com Insider.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Aquafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.